honestly speaking, growing up, I never had a chance to even think beyond basic safety and then a piece of bread for myself and my family. But my enthusiasm and interest has always been what tools I can use to ease the suffering of people around me. What can I do to bring a bit of hope, empathy, and kindness to the lives of people who have suffered so much?
Hello and welcome back to the Artpsis podcast, a series by Bosla Arts offering a glimpse into the life of artists and activists from all over the world, here to share their stories with you, the listener. My name's Georgia, I'm the host of the podcast, and today I'm so excited to share with you an interview with Omaid Sharifi, co-founder and CEO of Artlords. Artlords is a movement dedicated to leveraging the transformative power of art to advocate for freedom, democracy, and human rights. Originating in Kabul in Afghanistan, Artlords began its journey by transforming the war-torn cityscapes into canvases of colour and hope through street art. I talked to Omaid about how Artlords offered a way of bringing different people and communities across all of Afghanistan together. He tells us about the absolutely devastating regaining of control of the Taliban over Afghanistan in August 2021, but also how through art he's able to continue working with people, especially women within Afghanistan, and maintain hope of returning one day. Okay, well, Omaid, thank you so much for coming on the Artpsis podcast. It's a real honor to have you on here. I wanted to start by just asking you, how are you today? Where are you? How are things in general?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm really honored to be speaking with you. And thank you for asking how I am doing, because usually people don't ask you how you are, or if they do, they usually don't care. I think I'm the word to describe it. I'm surviving. I live in a beautiful place close to Washington, D.C. in the United States. I am very blessed and busy with my daughter, raising a beautiful daughter. She's 19 months old right now.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. I'm pretty much busy with a lot of work that we do through our organization, Artlords, and that involves a lot of work with artists who are at risk in Afghanistan, in South Asia and other parts of the world. So my days are magical, beautiful, with my daughter, being content, working with these artists and helping them and supporting them in their work. And sometimes relocating, evacuating them to safe spaces. Yeah. And also a lot of chaos and crisis, which involves a lot of mental health issues and trouble. Mm. So that is how I am.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot. And I think it's also the thing of having a small child and being around a small child is that, as ugly and horrible as the world is, there is children really represent, I think, hope, because they just see everything as new and exciting and they bring so much like joy and energy. So I could imagine being a father, it must bring a lot of good times as well.
Indeed. I think I'm very lucky to have both art and artists around me, which is always about hope, resilience, creativity, a bit of empathy and kindness in all of the work that we do.
Yeah.
And also, indeed, children and my daughter, she's a blessing for my family. I think it really changes the perspective. It brings a lot of work, but yeah, magical.
Well, we're obviously going to talk a lot about Artlords today, but I was hoping first you could tell us just a little bit about your early life, where you grew up, what life was like. Were you always interested in art and artists?
I grew up all my life. I was born, raised, educated, and lived my life in Kabul, which is the capital of Afghanistan. Kabul is a beautiful city. You have a beautiful river in the capital. You have a lot of mountains and hills. It's a typical, beautiful European capital that you can imagine.
Yeah.
So I was born here, and for generations, my family has lived in the city. So somehow I connect more with Kabul than with Afghanistan itself, because for me, Kabul has its own values, its own traditions, its own way of hospitality and kindness and care. So I was born there, and I almost lived all my life in Kabul. I would say this is probably the first time in the last 3 years that I have been away from Kabul. Wherever I would be traveling and working outside, I would go back to relax in Kabul. I was born in the middle of the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. So this is not a good time to be born in Afghanistan. It's the 80s. Which is the Soviet soldiers are in Afghanistan. There's a war happening, which is the Mujahideen and the guerrilla warfare. And then I was very young when the Soviets left, and we had a Soviet-backed government, and then they left. We had a very brutal civil war, and then we had the first time Taliban came in 1996. So my early childhood has been filled with seeing so many experiences of violence, suffering, and poverty happening all around me, and including in my own family. But I think being interested in art, I wouldn't say I was a very keen artist or interested in art, because honestly speaking, growing up, I never had a chance to even think beyond basic safety, a piece of bread for myself and my family. But my enthusiasm and interest has always been what tools I can use to ease the suffering of people around me. What can I do to bring a bit of hope, empathy, and kindness to the lives of people who have suffered so much? And I think that desire pushed me through art and activism, which I think in a way was both bringing a lot of hope, healing, empathy, and also creative solutions for the problems that we were facing in Afghanistan.
Yeah. And it sounds, you know, as you're describing that, it sounds a lot like the work that you obviously go on to do with Art Lords, which is embed so much of what you've just said. And I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about the very first mural that you did for Art Lords, which was in 2014. And it was called I See You. It's an amazing story, so I hope you can tell us about it. And what inspired you to do it at that moment in 2014?
So Art Lords came to being as a result of a symbol of oppression which was happening in my city at the time. So when I referenced living all my life in Kabul, I remembered the beautiful city being open to me riding my bicycle or walking to every place, every part of that city. But then suddenly what happened when the invasion happened from the NATO and American forces, and especially after 2008 and 2010, the city was mushrooming with a lot of these blast walls. They call it, it's for your audience, it's 8 meters tall, concrete and steel walls surrounding everything in the city. So imagine you're walking in a prison. How Kabul looked like in the past years. And this was a symbol of oppression, because the people who were on the other side of the wall were safe and secure. And these were the politicians, international community, and then the people on the other side, which were the ordinary people of Afghanistan, they were prone to a lot of explosions, a lot of suffering. So those walls were the reason that we started Art Lords. And it was just not me, but a very good group of our friends, Kabir, Lema, Basir, Rawel, we just decided to bring down these walls because it was, I wanted to reclaim back that space, which was a civic space, a space for all of us in Afghanistan that was taken by these corrupt politicians. So we started the first painting of the wall, I would say, or bringing down the wall. And that is the moment we realize that we have an opportunity, because these walls could be canvases. And these canvases could relay messages which are about important social issues. And one of those important social issues at that time for Afghanistan was corruption and fighting corruption. Because on the last 3 or 4 years before we started Uplords, the Transparency International's Corruption Index would rank Afghanistan among either number one or number two or number three most corrupt country in the world.
Wow.
And for me, as an Afghan, thinking about this and seeing that my people, the people I work with, the people I live with, they are not corrupt. They've been suffering from war, violence, and poverty all their lives. And these people who are on the other side of these walls, or the politicians, members of the military, the ministers, the president, the international community, the foreigners who are sort of the mercenaries coming, aid mercenaries in the country.
Yeah.
These people are corrupt. So this corruption is not the corruption of people of Afghanistan. This is the corruption of these people who are in charge. So that's how we started the ICU mural. We started painting. We invited everybody to join in. The work that we do from day one has been a participatory live mural painting on very politically charged and social issues. And then the important thing for us that we realized was when we are creating these platforms that people are coming and then painting with us, we have an opportunity to speak and share our ideas, our thoughts, our concerns with all of these people, and also give them a chance both to paint, engage, and also share their concerns. Because in societies like us, in that part of the world, Afghanistan, South Asia, or Middle East, we rarely get a chance to have a say in the politics of the country.
Yeah.
We are not engaged in making those decisions. Our votes does not count as much a vote will count in democracies in the West or in North America. So providing that platform for people to speak and share and engage, I think, giving that ownership that they're part of a movement, part of a campaign that can at least make a difference.
Yeah, that's incredible. And when you created ICU, it was on, was it on a ministry building?
I think that the first two ICU murals, the first one was at the Ministry of Education. And the second was at the spy agency. And these two ministries are in the heart of Kabul city. And then the roads which are crossing these streets, I can say like probably a million people would be crossing those streets every single day, because Kabul at that time was a city of 6 million people. And we were in the downtown heart of Kabul city. And we chose those two locations for a reason, because Ministry of Education at that time, they have a very important job of educating this country, of Afghanistan. And we have suffered from electricity and lack of education for a very long time, because when there's no education, people tend to go to and accept narratives which are about violence, extremism, and especially religious extremism.
Yeah.
So they had a very important job, but they were not doing their job. And there were reports that the Minister of Education, the Ministry of Education, had so many ghost schools, and they were embezzling hundreds of millions of dollars in books and in the name of the schools, and the students barely had anything, and they were still living under the tents and all of that. So strategically, we painted the first mural at the Ministry of Education, the second mural at the spy agency, because spy agency was adjacent to the presidential palace. And all the ministers were crossing that mural every single day. So I wanted every member of the parliament, every minister, and every ambassador or the UN organized person who is crossing this road, see this.
Yeah.
And at least think about it, because the message was very clear. A prominent eyes, couple of eyes. And these were, we chose the eyes of a small girl. Her name was Komal. Komal, her father, Raveel Singh, was a co-founder of Uplords. And then later he was killed in an explosion. So we decided to get her eyes, because the minorities in Afghanistan were not respected, and they are from the Sikh community in Afghanistan. They were not respected as much, and people were sort of disrespectful to them, and the government was somehow disrespectful to this community. And we took her eyes to honor the minorities in Afghanistan and put them on that wall with the message saying, I see you. These are the eyes of the people of Afghanistan. They know you're corrupt. They know you're stealing. If we cannot take you to justice today, but we will take you to justice. And also Afghanistan being a country that prides itself in being like 97% Muslim, and they believe in God, the message said that God is watching you if you're a Muslim, because sometimes you have to take away that religious thing that they have. Like, God is also watching you.
It's amazing. And I love the idea of these ministers going into work every day and having to face it and look at it and think about it. So it's really, really powerful. When you were kind of starting Art Lords, were there any street artists or public artists that you were looking at and inspired from, either in Afghanistan or around the world?
We were pretty much looking into street art movements that started in New York and in Brooklyn and other parts. But we were really inspired and loved the work of Banksy at that time. And if you could see some of the work that we have done at the early stages, like in 2014 and 15, many of our murals, I would say quite a few, are pretty much inspired by Banksy as well. So that really inspired our work at early stages. But then Art Lords found its own identity and somehow its own way of participatory mural painting. But we loved Banksy at that time. And my hope, and still at that time was and still is, that someday Banksy might be painting a mural with us in Kabul. Or at least, especially now, because right now, what happens in Afghanistan is extremely rare in any part of the world. There's a gender slavery happening.
Yeah.
That half of the population is not allowed to even go to public parks or education or work. So I thought maybe still someday Banksy will get in touch with us and say, let's do a mural.
That would be amazing. I'm waiting for that day.
Yeah, hopefully,
fingers crossed. If anyone's going to do it, it would be Banksy. So fingers crossed.
Yeah.
And so Art Lords went on to create, I think, 2,200 murals across Afghanistan and more around the world. Could you tell us a little bit about what it was like when, particularly when you went outside of Kabul and went to different parts of Afghanistan to create these murals? What was your experience? What were the kind of themes? Did they change as you went to different parts of Afghanistan? How was that for you?
So, Georgia, imagine we're talking about Afghanistan, a country that has been in war for the last 50 years.
Yeah.
So the people, at least the millennials, the Generation Z, even the new generation, they all have been born and grown in violence. Mm-hmm. So they never had a chance to go and see art. Like for me, growing up, I was, I don't know, 25 years old. I had still not seen an exhibition, or I have not been to a gallery by that age. And imagine me being a person who was growing up in downtown Kabul city with all the privileges that it has, but a person who is living on the border areas of Afghanistan and Pakistan, or in the border areas of Afghanistan and Iran, with limited access to even, they have to walk to a hospital for hours or to their schools. So they never had an opportunity to experience or see art. Art for them was so alien, like somebody coming from Mars. So we had to develop those visual alphabets for them to understand. And we had to bring art to them. And these murals, when we went to the provinces, were somehow encouraging people to be part of this whole experience. And when the issues were their own issues, if they had issues with clean water or public health or education, whatever it was, countering violent extremism, we would take those themes from the communities, and then we would create artworks, and then we would paint it with them. So that those experiences were extraordinary, because people first would give you any wall that you wanted to. All the murals of these 2,000 murals that we have done have all been on very prominent walls in the heart of the cities. If there was one prominent wall, that would be a mural from Art Lords in any corner of Afghanistan. So it means that either people and the government both were really enthusiastic to give us these walls, because these messages were important. And then anybody was welcome to paint. So if you're a kid, if you're the governor, if you're the minister, even the president, they all came and painted on these murals. And the murals had somehow those basic visual alphabets that they could understand. It wasn't like a big contemporary mural with all those carousels and stuff like that. It was easy, paint by numbers, get a brush, paint it, and then at the end they would see, they would be mesmerized that we would do a mural in 5 hours. So those experiences has been extraordinary. And that's why from over 2,000 murals that we painted, only three paintings were washed in the span of one decade.
Wow.
So imagine in a country like Afghanistan, with the lawlessness, with the violence that was happening, with the terrorism which was happening, and these murals being on the walls that anybody could do anything to them. The community itself protected them. Mm-hmm. It was their work. People will bring their friends and family and show them that, see, this is the part of the mural that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And they will take pride in it, and they will have stories about it. So that's how the experience has been all over the country.
Sounds amazing and so moving. Is there one mural in particular that you look back on as like one of the best experiences you had making murals?
There are quite a few. I think from the early experiences, the first time I was painting a mural in the street, I always had long hair. And then there was, I think, 7-8 of us painting a mural on that day. And there's like 3-4 girls, and there's a couple of us. And we're laughing, we're enjoying painting this mural. And then somebody came and stopped and started speaking in English with me. And I turned back and I spoke back in our local languages. And he was really surprised. He said, I thought you guys are all foreigners doing this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So they didn't believe that a person from Afghanistan would be doing something like this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to explain and then give him a brush. And then he became my friend, and he was coming to all the paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Or one day we were painting a mural at the presidential palace walls. And then a lady, at that time, not a lot of women would be wearing burqas, the blue thing in Kabul. So it was a rare thing to see a woman doing that in the center of the city in Kabul. What a kid. She just came in. She gave me that baby, which was probably a year old.
Mm-hmm.
And she started painting, I think, for an hour or an hour, 10 minutes.
Wow.
Not speaking a word. And then after 1 hour, she took the baby and left. And she was really good at painting.
Mm.
And I still think about that lady. And I'm thinking, like, what was happening in her mind that she just came in and undid that? Mm. Or people will be bringing us dried foods, food, even turbans. They will bring and put turbans on our head when we were painting in the murals. So there are extraordinary stories and encounters that I had with the people. And the most important part for me, which energizes me and inspires me, were the story of these people.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody who would come there, I had an opportunity to connect with them. I had an opportunity to listen to them, to their stories, to their suffering, to their solutions, to their recommendations. I think those stories really inspired the next works that we would be doing.
Wow, that just sounds incredible and goes to show the kind of ability of art that is so public like that to bring people together and also give people the opportunity to engage and speak in ways that, you know, approaching someone on the street just doesn't, you can't do that. But as soon as you offer someone a paintbrush, it just opens all of these opportunities. So that sounds incredible. And you mentioned that three murals were washed. Which were they and why?
I think the three, unfortunately, the three murals were all murals about female athletes, female singers, mm-hmm. about issues of women's rights. One of the murals is just right, this poster that you're seeing.
Oh, yeah.
This is a lady, her name is Farhonda. This was defaced a couple of times, I think. The first one, this is a very unfortunate incident. She was lynched by a mob in the center of Kabul and killed because they just accused her that she was insulting the Quran, the religious book of Muslims, which was not true.
Mm.
But then a mob came up in the street and they lynched her, they killed her. So I did a mural that's right across the mosque. That's the mosque that they killed her.
Oh,
and
wow.
I painted this mural of her right across that mosque. And I would be going there and painting this mural every year on that day that she was killed with a different message. So this mural was defaced one time. There's a famous Afghan singer, a woman singer, which has been on the nerves of all these religious clerics. Her mural was defaced as well, because some of, maybe they don't like her. So that's the only three murals that I remember.
Mm. Well, it's very touching also that you would go back and create that mural for her in her memory every year. It's really, really powerful.
Hi, this is Hossam Fazula, co-founder of Bosla Arts. The Arpsis podcast is independently run by Bosla Arts, me and Georgia, which allows us to share these important conversations with artists and activists from all over the world. In order to keep having these conversations, we need your help. Join us on Patreon for as little as £3 and help us continue this vital work. More info in the episode description. Now back to the podcast.
This month and this year marks 3 years since the Taliban retook control over Afghanistan in one of the most, I think, devastating moments of history that we've seen. And in these 3 years, we've seen women's rights eradicated and art and culture effectively banned. Only as much as you want to answer this question, can you tell us a bit about that time and what it was like to experience it more? And it doesn't have to be personal to you, but also just being there and seeing it. How did it affect you, and how did it affect Art Lords as well?
This is a very difficult month,
both
for me, my country, and the people I know.
When
it's August, and when it's August 15, especially, I think I have not still come to a closure. I have not still sat down with myself to really think about what happened.
Mm.
Because last 3 years for me has been, I've been on a survival mode. I have been on a mission to not let Art Lords die, to evacuate artists, to help artists. So that somehow has pushed me to be and working like a machine for the last 3 years. Mm. I have not taken a day off, honestly, since August 15. It has its impacts on my health, both mental and physical, which I am realizing every day. I do feel those PTSD, the anxieties, the panic attacks. Although I think I've been a very strong person all my life, going through a lot of these experiences and seeing a lot of violence and suffering in my life, I've always found ways to deal with all of those traumas.
Mm.
But some things like this August 15 seems too much to handle. So I've been compartmentalizing it in the back of my mind. And I don't know when I have to open that box and deal with it, which I should. But August 15, I was painting a mural with my team in Kabul when they told me that the Taliban are here.
Mm.
The events that took place until I got out of Kabul, I stayed there for a week with the Taliban. And then I was moved in those planes that everybody saw in the news with all the chaos and explosions and everything. So I was moved to a refugee camp, and then from that refugee camp, I came to the U.S. But for us, it was not a failure for positive forces like Art Lords or civil society organizations or artists, but it's a failure for the whole world, because you're letting a terrorist group, a dark force, who does not respect humanity, who does not respect freedom, who does not respect basic human rights, you're letting that kind of a group win in a part of the world which can have implications for all over the world. If you're letting a group like that win, it could be an inspiration for a lot of those religiously charged, violent groups to get inspiration from them, which we, I think, will be seeing more results of that. I think we should have not let that win for a group like that. So that breaks my heart. It breaks my heart that my country is going through this. We have had worked a lot in the last 20 years of the presence of the NATO and American forces, and the couple of decades of democracy and freedom, and not just with treasure, but with a lot of blood. I have lost 3 members of my team in explosions. I've had numerous death threats on myself. I had to live in 3 different houses, change my cars all the time. I have come to being killed, I've seen death face to face many times.
Yeah,
all of that, and then this is the result that we are seeing. So that really breaks my heart. So since that day, I think a lot of us, when I speak about all of these issues, I'm speaking about a lot of Afghan society activists, about artists, that they are going through the same thing. They have lost their country. They are in exile. They have been in different. They have to start everything from zero. A few of the organizations survived this whole crisis, and Artlots is one of those organizations. So we luckily have an office here in the US. We have a small office in Pakistan. We have a small office in Toronto, Canada. And of course, our office in Kabul, not all of them, but just one of them remained open throughout this time. We continued working both inside and outside Afghanistan. So for us, in terms of work, we have expanded that mandate that we had. We had to adjust to the repression and to whatever is happening under the Taliban. And imagine Taliban, imagine a place that you cannot listen to music like that.
Yeah.
I'm speechless when I explain this to our friends from the West, because I think we were music and singing even predates speech in our evolution, because I think the early humans, they somehow knew how to sing and dance and then create music even before communicating, speaking. So how can you stop something which is in our nature so much?
Yeah.
So music is banned, any expression of art is banned. So we are dealing with that kind of situation with a terrorist group, which is the Taliban. And I have to deal with that every day because I have a team inside Afghanistan. I have an office, and they go through this every single day.
I think a lot of people would be very surprised to hear that you continue to operate within Afghanistan. Obviously, without going into any kind of detail, what kind of work are you continuing to do in Afghanistan?
Specifically, four areas that we're focused inside the country. The first is support for artists. And this support is both in two ways. There's mental health support, which we provide. Some forms of it is art therapy and painted meditation, and also financial support, because all the artists, they have lost their livelihoods. So if you're an artist in Afghanistan, you will be starving. So this is the first area of our focus. The second area of our focus is finding ways that we could relocate these artists to a safer environment where they can continue producing their art, preserving their traditions and culture. And then once the Taliban are gone, that we could take these art back and we don't have to start from zero. And the third aspect of our work is a mentorship program for the female artists. We have around 108 female artists who are going through this mentorship program. We provide them with all the painting and drawing materials. We provide them with both in-person and virtual training sessions where they are starting to paint. And I think it's one of the ways that they are expressing their anger and fear and anxieties.
Yeah.
And then we take these paintings and we ship them out of Afghanistan and we provide exhibitions somehow to bring that strong voice of Afghan woman out.
Yeah.
And the fourth area is our preservation and of art and culture, which we record all the incidents that's happening against the culture workers, artists, art sites. We are recording all of those for history. And also we are doing some murals, we do some exhibitions inside, which we have to be very careful, but that work continues.
It's absolutely incredible. And I think, is it on your website, you can see a gallery where we can see some of those artworks that you have got out of Afghanistan. So definitely in this episode description, I will put a link so everyone can see it, because it's amazing.
Thank you. Yes, I think these art, and also I had a gallery in Kabul, and when the Taliban came, I had to destroy all these sculptures that we had because I could not hide the sculptures.
Yeah.
But the paintings, we removed all the frames, we rolled them down. And through a very difficult process, I took out around 200 paintings out of my gallery.
Wow.
And now they're out here in the US. So those paintings, it has a beautiful story, the journey that they have taken and also being rescued under the Taliban. Those are also available in our websites, both Outlots and Outlots.gallery, so people can see, and also if they want, they can purchase it as well.
That's fantastic. And obviously you mentioned, you know, your mental health. And I think, I don't know, honestly, the amount that you've been through, and also the fact that it's only been 3 years, which in the scale of things is a very short amount of time. And when you're working still with people in Afghanistan, I mean, it just completely makes sense that there's a lot to deal with. How do you give yourself a break and take time? Or do you find that you literally cannot stop working? I mean,
I think at this moment of time, it's very unhealthy that I'm saying this, but I cannot find the time to stop and take a break, because it might not be true, but I think the moment I stop, something wrong is happening. And that moment that I'm taking to respond to a WhatsApp message or fill a form for a visa application or send the money through Hawala to somebody is probably saving a life or probably saving future of somebody. So that's incredibly hard for me to stop. Most of the days I have to really dig deep down inside my soul to get that energy and inspiration to stand up on my feet and say, okay, I'll continue to this. Because I have also lost it. I came out of Kabul with just one shirt and my laptop.
Wow.
And I had a life that I had built for 35 years. Yeah. So I had left everything behind. So for me, starting over, for me, for my family, for my daughter, that's also a big responsibility. But at the same time, this responsibility falls on your shoulder, which is a responsibility for the country, for the artist. And so it's incredibly hard. But I've looked into my friends, the support network that I have, which are my friends and family. They have incredibly amazing people who are generous with their time, with their advice. That helps with the healing. When I see small wins, when I paint a mural in Kabul, which has rarely happened in the last 3 years, maybe we have done 3-4 murals, that those small wins makes a lot of sense and makes me content. When I evacuate somebody from Kabul and they arrive in London or in Washington, D.C., that's a win that makes me happy. But overall, I'm at a stage, Georgia, honestly, that's very close to that breaking point. So I'm thinking of ways that I can take care of myself, because if I am not okay, I cannot do this work. So, and this message for anybody who is listening to us as well is that most important thing is taking care of yourself, your mental health, your physical health, because with that, you can make sound decisions.
Yeah.
You will be effective to anybody else if you're okay. If you're not okay, you cannot be helpful to anybody else. So with that in mind, I'm also trying to find ways that I can heal myself and deal with those traumas and anxieties.
I really, really hope that you get the time and the space and a slight release of responsibility off of your shoulders to have that break. And I kind of, just as we're wrapping up, I wanted to maybe reflect on something you said about the failure of the rest of the world in when it comes to Afghanistan. And, you know, I'm from the UK, and I think me and most of the people that I know recognize the huge, huge failure of the UK government and its role in Afghanistan, obviously, in allowing the Taliban to come back, but also not helping those needed to escape. You know, it's been a really huge thing. So I wanted to just reflect on your experience of being in America, for example, and also the kind of work that you're doing inside America now with Art Lords, and how you reflect on that.
There's two feelings, Georgia. The first feeling is that feeling of betrayal, which obviously is what the U.S. administrations decided, how the NATO forces and NATO governments, they decided to deal with the situation with the Taliban. I think a lot of us in Afghanistan, and I'm not saying this just because of the recent incident of the Taliban coming to power. Imagine when the Soviets invaded Afghanistan, and then all these, the American money, the CIA, the Saudis, the Pakistanis, they started brainwashing a whole generation of Afghans into fighting jihad against the Soviet Union. And once that goal was achieved, you left the whole country, literally abandoned the whole country with all these people who were brainwashed into being like human bombs.
Yeah.
So there is so many instances in our recent history in Afghanistan that the international community has significantly failed to do the basic thing. They have not been helpful, but a very destructive force in the development of Afghanistan. And one recent example has been what happened to the Republic and how the Taliban gained power. This is one thing, and I'm not asking this for the people of Afghanistan. We remember what happened in 9/11, and we will know, I'm certain, that even worse things can happen with the current Taliban being in charge of Afghanistan. The rate of that they are creating madrasas and religious schools And the way their army has suicide attack, I think, I don't know what's the military name, but they have a whole company of the suicide attackers.
Wow.
They are in the museum of Kabul today. They are putting all these yellow boxes which were used as bomb making cans. So you have this group, and this will hurt the world. This will hurt anybody. No one will be safe in London or DC or any place.
Yeah.
If we have a terrorist regime responsible in Afghanistan. That is first. The second thing, I think, apart from that feeling of heartbreak and betrayal from the administrations or the governments of these countries, the second feeling is a feeling of being grateful. I have had so many American friends who have been so kind and generous that the experience has been completely different. So I separate the people from their governments. And coming to the U.S., starting from zero, I'm very grateful that my partner, my wife, my daughter, my family is safe. They can continue to live their life in relative safety, pursue their dreams. And also, I have that platform. I have my voice. That was the only reason I left Afghanistan, to have this voice, to have my art, to stand up against this tyranny. So U.S., the experience has been that I am able to do that, to continue doing that. And I think I'm more impactful being here than I would be in Afghanistan right now, because I can mobilize all these resources. I can do a lot of advocacy. I can push different art institutions and people to come to the support of Afghanistan. So the experience has been both in both ways. But I'm, end of the day, I'm very grateful that I'm here. And I wish I was in Afghanistan. I miss it every day. I miss my mountains. There's no week that I wouldn't cry one time when I see a picture in YouTube, when I see a video of Kabul City. I miss it. It's my homeland. Yeah. Nothing replaces that. But all of that is with the hope that someday, sooner or later, I'll be back on those streets. I'll be painting murals. And we will go with more force. And what makes me happy is that we will not be starting from zero. I'll be taking back all the artists that I have evacuated and rescued. I'll be taking all the artworks with me that I have rescued, and they will be there, and we will continue building on what we have had built in the last 20 years.
Huge thanks to Ahmed for joining us for this week's episode. If you'd like to learn more about his work and the work of Art Lords, you can find links in the episode description. And thank you for joining us for another episode of the Arpsis podcast. As always, if you're enjoying the podcast, please rate us, follow us, and share with friends and family. Only with your help can these truly important stories be heard. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week with another episode.